guys, and welcome to another episode of Soundtracking. It's August, and August to us means sports, I guess. None of us watch them, but it seems like a sports time. So we're going to talk about the greatest sports movie that's ever been made, Basketball, the soundtrack to Basketball, which, Scott, do you know what record label put out this soundtrack?
No.
Mojo Records. This was a Mojo Records soundtrack.
Should that mean anything to me? I'm sorry.
Mojo Records is like the label that like Goldfinger and like all of these other ska bands from the 90s were on.
That explains.
Anyway, I think it's the only soundtrack that they ever put out. But it's a fucking fantastic soundtrack, actually. I listened to it yesterday while I was driving to New Jersey. So let's dive right in. Kicks off with Take On Me cover, Real Big Fish. This was like you couldn't avoid this cover when it came out. It was a pretty huge hit, actually.
And this is, in my opinion, the all-time best punk or ska cover ever.
Yeah, I have trouble thinking off the top of my head of one to even counter.
I tried to come up with other ones. I went through my iTunes, and some shit on the original Punk Goes Pop is good.
The original Punk Goes Pop is super underappreciated as an album because the rest of those albums were trash.
Diminishing returns of the later albums.
There's some gold mines in the later albums, though, that get over the rest of the album suck.
But what I'm saying is, like, the rest of the albums was like one to two good songs, whereas like Punk Goes Metal and Punk Goes Pop were like legitimately good records.
Do you ever think a band was everything forced? Else? Yeah, do you think a band was, like, forced to be on those ever? Because I ever... Because, like, Say Anything...
They used to seem to not give a shit about their cover.
Oh, yeah,
that's
when he did...
Baby Got Your Money. Yeah, but that's the thing is that I feel like that was totally Bemis's idea. Because he was like, this will be funny to fuck with people. He's a prick like that.
Yeah.
But I know for a fact that in the later albums... The later albums of that franchise, one of the biggest issues with them is that they basically would go on MySpace, find a band that had a lot of MySpace followers, and basically be like, hey, do you want to be on Punk Goes Pop? We'll give you like $400 to cover a song. And they, with that $400, they had to also pay for their own studio time. Like, it was like, so that's why a lot of it sounds like trash. Like, it was like,
that's so funny. Is that true?
I'm basing that off of information.
Is that true or assumption?
That's based on information given to me by a kid who briefly interned at the record label, but he also really hated his time there, so it could be like a biased lie. But based on the fact that half of those bands don't even have wiki pages, I don't find it impossible to believe that, hey, MySpace is really popular, there's these bands that have a ton of listeners, let's just get these bands for cheap to like do these covers and it'll sell our record. Like, it was...
You know, I'd probably take him up on that offer, too, if I was some MySpace band.
Yeah, just to get exposure.
When I was doing Ichabod Crane and we had, like, 50,000 followers on MySpace, which means absolutely jack squat because nobody's heard of us now. But, you know, like, back in 2007, if whatever label that was came to me and was like, here, do a metal cover of something, I would have jumped at the chance.
Yeah, just because your name would, even if it was, like, 10%, like 50% of the bands were MySpace garbage that no one had heard of, there'd still be the other 50% of the band that's like, oh, this could be with like Big Wig or like Stretch Armstrong or some band that has like notable fans where people would be exposed to my band.
So this is the thought process for me. Yes, it would be awesome to be on a comp with big bands that I love and respect, but more than that, it would be an excuse for me to do a cover. Everybody that listens to this everybody that is on Patreon knows that gets the newsletter knows that I fucking love doing covers.
And, well, you're lucky because there's about four of them on this album.
But like what I like is finding a cover, and I was talking to Megan about this I was telling her that we were going to do a Basketball episode of Soundtracking and how Take On Me is my all-time favorite cover. And I said, you know, that's what I really liked about when I was doing metal covers is that you find something that is it's obscure enough that people won't automatically be like, oh, I've heard a cover of this. But it's not obscure enough that they're like, I've never heard this song before. So when we did, say, when my metal band did Call Me by Blondie, it's like obscure enough that people haven't heard it in like 10 years, the original. But then there's some recognizable, oh my God, this song.
Yeah.
And that was always my thing, was like figuring out a song that's just on that cusp of obscurity and then making it yours. And a lot of those later Punk Goes Pops compilations were just bands doing like a song that was 3 years old.
Yeah.
Towards the end, it was songs that were still on the Billboard.
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense to me. And also, if you're doing a song that's already a pop song, like that's a pop song with kind of a little bit of pep and some distortion, you're not really doing a cover. You're not doing an interesting cover.
There was a lot of weird stuff. Like, I also don't understand how Flagpole Sitta by Harvey Danger ends up on a Punk Goes Pop album as opposed to a Punk Goes 90s album. Because that is way more of a 90s song than a pop song to me.
Do you remember I texted you guys, because I forget what the name of the newest Punk Goes album was, but it was a pop punk hardcore-ish band covering Brand New.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some weird shit in there. Anyway, so Take On Me, great cover, is what we're getting at. It's immediately followed by one of my favorite bands that never really got big, Nerf Herder, Don't Hate Me Because I'm Beautiful. Man.
I sing this song to Megan all the time. Oh my God, this is my all-time favorite Nerf Herder song.
I think Nerf Herder is, they're not a good band. Like, I feel like I have to preface with, like, none of them are like stupid talented musicians, but that's kind of the charm, is that it's just good dorky music. That song Van Halen is so fucking catchy and funny. I love that song.
I love Pantera's Fans in Love.
Pantera Fans in Love is great, and 5,000 Ways to Die, which I think is...
5,000 Ways to Die is their second best song, yeah.
Yeah, oh, it's so good. Like,
I'm opening up my... I need to look at my Nerf Herder stuff in iTunes, because I know I'm forgetting something.
Their newest album is really, really good. Rockingham.
They're still making music?
Yeah, they reunited not too long ago. Let me read you. The song titles on their newest album are like fantastic. On Rockingham, it has the following song titles: Portland, At the Con, The Girl Who Listens to Rush, Ally Gertz, We Once Opened for Weezer, Jackie Got Married, I'm the Droid That You're Looking For, Ghostbusters 3, Doctor Who, Stock Photo Girl, and Close Your Eyes and Dream. But yeah, the We Open for Weezer song is so fucking good. Because, like, as funny as that title is, it's actually like a really touching song about, like, hey, like, we've never made it big, but we got to do a lot of really cool things, and that's made this journey, like, super worth it for us. Like, and it's this very, like, motivational song about, like, fucking just do it. Like, go out and do it. Like, you never know what's gonna happen. You could open for Weezer one day.
So there's a psychopath out there that loves this movie more than we do, which is insane. Because my friend was texting me the other day when I told him I had to do the soundtrack. Every song about this movie that he just kind of knew off the rip, we started doing quotes. He's like, yeah, me and my best friend growing up really knew this movie. He was way better than me, because he knew all the sports, like the team changes, and he knew the sack race off the top of his head. And I was like, I don't remember. I was like, I've seen this movie 100 times, and I don't remember a sack race. And he sends me this long clip of like the sports announcers just like talking about the finals. And it's like 5 minutes long, and just like, and then if it's a tiebreaker, it comes down to a sack race. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me?
I love that. So I don't give a shit about sports. Like, I make no bones about how little I give a shit about sports. I actually actively despise sports, because people give money. They spend hundreds of dollars to go see a baseball game, but they won't spend $5 to see a band play. It's like, oh, can I get in free? Well, fuck you. You spent $300 on season tickets to see the Browns, you know, like the worst team in history.
That's why I like minor league baseball games where the highest ticket price is about $10. And if you show up after the third inning, you just get in for free.
No, that's not the reason why you like minor league. You like minor league because there's things like midget wrestling.
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah, that helps. There was the monkey rodeo recently.
Okay, that's fucked up.
Monkeys riding dogs.
That is inappropriate. That is animal cruelty. I do not support that. You think I'm joking? Stop laughing.
I went to a minor league hockey game, the Phantoms, and it was old school night, and they had Blue from Old School there. And in halftime, he sang Dust in the Wind and was like, join us next week for Beetlejuice night.
Dead.
This was when I was like 13. And this,
okay,
this shows how old it is. It said, join us next week for Beetlejuice night. And it just had pictures of Beetlejuice from Howard Stern. Like, they just got like the most obscure people to show up to minor league events.
They're like, here's $50. Yeah.
The amount of times that I've gotten emails from the local minor league baseball team where it's like, hey, this B-list professional wrestler is going to be signing at the game. And then friends of mine will go, and it's like the dude's just shoved in between like a Chickie and Pete's and a Dipping Dots stand at a table. I feel like there's part of me that'd be like, I hope I'm famous enough to be asked to a minor league game, but yeah. I'd also turn it down. I'd be like, no, I'm good.
Well, you gotta look at minor league games. Like if someone invited you to go to whatever it is, the Carnival of Souls or whatever the ICP festival is, it's like, you don't care
gathering
about
the
gathering, right? You don't care about
the
event. You don't care about anything that's going on in the event. You're not even going to watch the event. You just want to watch people and watch like the weird side things that goes on. Matt, I know you'd catch a few sets, but like aside from you, I'm talking like
you, he'd be camped the fuck out in front of the stage.
So next on this album, I was shocked how much I like the song Tonight by Deep Blue Something. If this is what Deep Blue Something actually sounds like, then I might be interested in listening to more Deep Blue Something, because I always just knew them as the Breakfast at Tiffany's band. But this song kind of
rocks. This song's awesome. It's got like a Stroke 9 feel to it, which I like.
Yes, Stroke 9 is like, now that's a band that we need to talk about.
But see, what I want to try to figure out is like, is Breakfast at Tiffany's what Deep Blue Sea normally sound, or Deep Blue Something normally? Yeah. Is that what Deep Blue Something normally sounds like? But they realized they were on an album with all like pop punk bands, so they wanted to go a little bit more pop punk. Or are they like a pop punk band that just happened to have this one cheesy hit, a la like the Goo Goo Dolls before they became famous? Like, I don't know which
the
one.
The most
it
common
is.
Occurrence, and I've never listened to Deep Blue Something. I really want to see Deep Blue Sea. Is usually their hit sounds nothing like them. So hopefully it sounds more
I'm
like
curious.
This, but all I can think about now, all I hear in my head is just Dave Chappelle yelling, Deep Blue Sea, they ate me! A fucking shark ate me!
Dude, that is college. Again, all
and
we
by
did
way,
was quote Chappelle's show.
It was a great
And if
show
we want to talk about Stroke 9, I think we might need to throw the Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back soundtrack on the list of movies to discuss.
That's fine.
That's got the best Stroke 9 song. Yeah.
Wait, what's the best? What's on it?
How many people want to kiss some ass?
You know mine.
I do.
Because it's the same as Megan's, so you know mine.
Little Black
Backpack. Little Black Backpack. Yeah. Dude, I don't know if Megan could pick a favorite.
They're a great band.
Because she loves those guys.
So the next song on this album is one of the more iconic songs from the album, even though I've never heard of this band besides the song, the Super Suckers with
You've been signed out. And you're going down. I'm a no class something. It's when they're getting drunk with the kid.
I loved this fucking song as a kid, and I'm so glad we're doing the soundtrack because I need to find the song now. It's so fucking, it gets you so
Matt
jacked
sent
up.
It to you.
Brian, I sent you the entire soundtrack.
I mean, via, I have it on my iTunes. I mean, via like Spotify. I got to look it up to see if it's on Spotify.
Yeah,
okay.
Okay, fair.
So, I mean, there's not much else to say, though. The song's just great, but it's... It's the most clearly written for this movie song.
So I meant to mention this earlier, but we got sidetracked with whatever. And So this is one of my all-time favorite comedies. I think that it's a three-way tie. Basketball, Super Troopers, and 40-Year-Old Virgin. Now, the reason I mention that is because in Super Troopers, you know the first song that plays is Geez Louise by the Unband? I think that that and Psyched Out would be great on a 45, like one on each side. Yeah. You know, because they're very similar songs.
You know what's insane? I just went to add to see if I could find this on Spotify. This band has 20 fucking albums. There's
what?
Like two or three Jesus. Live, but in total, there's 20 fucking albums on Spotify of this band. So I'm not going to do my research now to figure out what album this song is on.
No. I bet that it's not on any album.
Just
that
on the soundtrack. That's insane.
So the next song I actually don't remember.
Nope.
Plasticine Lemon Yellow.
I don't remember it from the movie.
Yeah, I don't remember from the movie. I don't even remember from the soundtrack that I listened to last night. So we're going to go ahead and skip to, like, so this Soul Asylum song, I Will Still Be Laughing.
God damn, how do they keep coming up?
They were a soundtrack band, dude. But here's the thing. I'm listening to the song in my car, and I'm liking it, but I feel like I've heard it 1,000 times before, to the point that I was convinced it was a cover, but it's an original, so I think it's just the closing credits song, maybe? And I've watched this movie so much that it's been, like, I recognize it, but, like, Soul Asylum, I think that that was what their gift was. The gift of Soul Asylum was that they were very good at writing a closing credits song. Like, their songs have a very, like, oh, it's time to get up and go feel.
I don't know if that's proud of.
Because they do the closing credits song for Clerks, which is, like, all of the songs they've done for soundtracks are better than any song that they've put on their actual albums, which is a very depressing thing to know. But, I Will Still Be Laughing. I was like, this song's not bad. But I was a lot happier when I got past it and got to Cherry Pop and Daddy's covering Jump in the Line, Shake, 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 Sonora from Beetlejuice.
This is the fireworks scene, right?
Yeah, this is where he's a giant pineapple.
Ah, yes.
And they just start making out. What a great scene. It made so many people uncomfortable.
Oh, man. In heist, so I've watched this movie maybe not 100 times, but I think I've probably seen it 50 times. And I am doing my best not to just quote it incessantly and be an annoying prick right now. But yeah, we used to quote this shit.
Dude.
Obsessively.
Is that scene?
Bro.
Dude.
Yep.
Yeah. Just his face when he goes, dude. Trey Parker's face is just taken back.
But I think that my favorite line might have to be when he goes, dude, I love hostels. He goes, no, you don't. You love Taco Bell.
I'm trying to find the one quote that's from this scene. And it's very hard to scroll through this wiki page quickly enough to find it. There it is. I found it. Squeak's entire speech, where he just says, would you guys take a minute and look at yourselves fighting on the Mukulaka board?
God.
It's like, if you've forgotten what basketball means to America, then you only have to look at this board. The Mukulaka Balance Board of Trust. I just love this movie. I'm kind of on the same. I'm not as anti-sports as Scott, but I'm definitely not a sports person. But if there was if basketball was a legitimate televised sport, and right now ESPN is airing the cornhole tournament, so I don't feel like it's that far out of reality, I would watch the shit out of the actual basketball league, because if it's like this movie, it seems like it would be out of control. Like, it was just,
I thought we said no more Journey Psych outs. Yeah.
I would actually play. I think it's the one professional sport I could play.
That's the point, though, is for a bunch of out of shape dudes. And, like, I mean, it's basketball. It's baseball, because baseball is for fat dudes that can't, like, run. Yeah. You know, it's.
But yeah, I'm really good, so no one can get to me. You can't really psych me out. Because I'm just stuck in a depression. And then
I heard you just going out with Squeak.
And then
I'm just on a downward spiral as it is.
Yeah. You're not gonna tell me anything I don't know. And then I had a basketball net in my driveway growing up. I didn't have friends, so I am really good at shooting a basketball, but I'm not really good if someone's there to try to slow me down.
Yeah, you're like, as long as no one's trying to stop the ball from going in the hoop, I can get that ball in the hoop pretty easily.
No problem.
All right, so the next two songs on the soundtrack, again, like the plastic scene song, I just don't remember them at all, like even from my listen last night. There's Lucci Liu and the Mitchie one with The Honeymoon Is Over. I think I was taking a phone call at the time that this came on, so I missed this one entirely. It didn't sound that great. The Ernies, who I feel like I should know, but I never listened to, have the song Motivate. Scott, were you into the Ernies?
No.
I think they're just a ska band, though, right? It sounds like a ska band name.
Yeah. Little ska
they're
band.
They're like a reggae.
On my street. Little ska band.
Okay.
This song is reggae.
So fucking. Okay. But then, Real Big Fish comes back on the soundtrack with Beer.
The only song I still listen to within like the past month. This is on my playlist. I fucking love this song, and I've loved this song for over 10 years.
I mean, I've said this before, and it's cliche. I mean, Turn the Radio Off is like top five favorite albums of all time for me. I can put that album on and I can sing along with every song. I can sing along with the horn parts.
Yeah.
It's like I know this album note for note in my head. Like I don't even think Beer's the best song on it. Like I think sleeper hit on this album is I'll Never Be. I fucking love I'll Never Be.
Scott Tanik's great. the cover of Suburban Rhythm, where they do it in like six different genres.
Oh, you're thinking about the live
performance of the cover. The live performance where they do it in like six different genres is awesome. The very unfortunate thing is this album is in your top 10. I guarantee you every other Real Big Fish album isn't in your top 100.
No, Cheer Up is going to be up there.
We've talked about that before. I think I think that we might have done that one when we were waiting to meet up with Brian. When we did...
I Know What You Did Last Summer soundtrack.
Yeah. We were just talking about Real Big Fish. But my favorite Real Big Fish is Why Do They Rock So Hard? Because
I was going to say, I know that you love that album.
That's just like an arena rock record, because I really think that Take On Me was recorded during that same session or right before they started the recording session for that, because it sounds...
I thought it was going to be on it, because it sounds like it should be on that record.
Yeah.
I think it was a bonus track in, like, Japan on that CD.
That didn't surprise me. I'll tell you what, So I had a ska metal band in college that was trying to be RX Bandits, kind of. But The Resignation, RX Bandits, not... their first record.
Where they were like a reggae band.
Actually their later stuff is more reggae. They're more of like punk ska. Their first one, what's that record called that's got
which one? Those Damn Bandits or the Halfway Between
Here and There?
Yeah.
That one. That's their second record. We were trying to be a little bit more like The Resignation, like way more political, way more metal. Anyway, we covered Beer.
Nice.
Real Big Fish. Hello? And she has a girlfriend now, because we had a lesbian drummer, and then our guitar player would play drums and she and I would switch off between the vocals, and she has a girlfriend now, and that was in college, and we would just play parties, like house parties, and Beer got people so fucking amped. I was in a metal band for a decade, and Beer got people more amped than anything I ever did in a metal band.
So I have a question, because I feel like all three of us at some point we're pretty big ska aficionados in our lives.
Oh, yeah.
What is a ska band that you think like just was left in the dirt?
Mustard
and like
Blood.
Okay, I think it's a fair one. My like, I would argue probably my second favorite ska band of all time, and they only had like three records, and they were never big. I fucking love the Hippos.
You've talked about the Hippos and how much you love them.
Yeah. Oh my god, their second album, Heads Are Gonna Roll, might be my favorite album of all time. Like, just for how much I listen to it and sing along with it. Like, I used to, like, have an answer that was, like, a little bit more, like, oh yeah, no, I really like this indie rock band or whatever. But like, no, if I'm being totally honest, my favorite album of all time is Heads Are Gonna Roll by the Hippos. It is so goddamn catchy. And it's just it's a ska band with a Moog keyboard player just doing electronic shit. It's so good. It's so catchy.
Here's a band that Brian, I know I already said mine, and I want you to do yours as well. But do you guys remember Against All Authority?
Yes.
Okay, Against All Authority might actually be the band. Like, Mustard Plug was great, and they were a legit ska band, but I feel like Against All Authority gets lost because they were like street punk, like Rancid, but they also had horns. And so maybe they had like four or five records, but I think that All Fall Down, which is their second record, I want to say, is a totally forgotten gem. They're on Hopeless Records, just like Mustard Plug and Dillinger Four and all the bands that I basically like cut my teeth on with punk. Man.
They were the opening band for the Ska Is Dead tour, which was like one of my favorite tours I ever went to, because it was Against All Authority, and then it was Streetlight Manifesto, and then it was Less Than Jake, and then Real Big Fish. And that was like the tour. And I was like, wow. That's fucking great lineup. The only thing that bummed me out.
I got to see Against All Authority one time at the old Peabody's in Cleveland, but I don't remember who the headliner was. It's going to bug the shit out of me. Was it Suicide Machines? Yeah.
Oh, that's a great show.
Yeah, it was Suicide Machines, and then there was some female fronted like street punk type band that was playing after. Oh, that's what sucked so bad, was that it was Against All Authority played first. And I was like, these guys are legends. Why are they playing first? And this was 2004, I think it was 2004. So they played, and then this band from, I want to say Philadelphia or Pittsburgh, but they were called The Code, and they really wanted to be Anti-Flag. I mean, they're okay. They're, you know, whatever, regional band. And then this female fronted band that wanted to be Rancid / The Clash. And then it was Suicide Machines, and nobody gave a shit about Against All Authority. And it really bummed me out.
I feel like they were like one of those bands that's been around forever, but they're always kind of been that band that you had to be in the know to know of. Where like Suicide Machines at least had like a few minor hits that people
Suicide
were aware
Machines
of.
They're way bigger than we give them credit for.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I never really went through a huge ska phase like that. You know, like I liked
You're too cool.
No, I just, you know, I like Suicide Machines, which then you could really debate them being ska. I like Hippo songs. And I mean, you kind of can. They're like ska without horns almost.
Isn't that still a thing? You know, like I feel like it's still ska even if you don't have horns.
But I get what Brian's saying, because Suicide Machines is also weird, because I feel like depending on the album and depending on the songs, it's like a different Suicide Machines. Like you've got like a ska Suicide Machines album, and then like Battle Hymns is almost more of a hardcore punk album with a couple ska songs.
Yeah. I feel like they're more like an oi band a lot of
the time. Yeah, I think that's the best way to describe it. And then they have the kind of sellout album that I really like, actually, the very pop punky self-titled album that they did.
Wait, which one is that?
That's the one with Sometimes I Don't Mind, that's about his dog. Like, and I'll watch you sleep sometimes, even though you never talk back. I buy you things sometimes because I don't mind.
That explains it. I only have three records by them. I have Destruction by Definition, A Match and Some Gasoline, and War Profiteering Is Killing Us All.
Oh, dude, you definitely need to get some Battle Hymns up in there. You might like the self-titled if you just pretend it's not Suicide Machines. It sounds nothing like them. Like, it's just a very like poppy punk record.
So it sounds like Guttermouth.
Yeah, I'll send you the single from that.
Just send me the whole thing so I don't have to go looking for it.
I guess only like true ska band that I was into that Matt showed me when I was younger, because like, as you can tell by the Everything About Me, I like things that are just fucking bonkers. So I was a huge fan of the Aquabats for a brief stint.
Oh yeah,
because they were just fucking ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. Well, what's your favorite Aquabats song?
You're going to hate me because it's so cliche, but Super Rad. I love Super Rad.
Super Rad's great. Super Rad's great. I mean, I think Fury of the Aquabats is a solid record. Like, it's, that's a pretty, and I like that they, like, were able to drop the horns and kind of go for, like, a more surf rock sound, but still be a ska band. All right. So speaking of ska bands.
Wait. Favorite Aquabats song, and then I'll tell you mine.
Okay. It's probably Pizza Day.
I have a three-way tie between pizza.
Actually, no. Sorry, I lied. It's Play-Doh Land. I love that song.
Okay, yeah. I think that Sequence Erase might be my favorite song by them, though.
That is a great jam.
But it's also not really a ska song. It's like kind of a metal-y surf song.
Well, don't forget that Aquabats was on the Punk Goes Metal album, and they covered a song. And they covered a song that didn't exist. They just created a fictional metal band and then wrote an original.
Y-Rock is not a real band?
No.
That song is... They just...
That's just an Aquabats original.
I love it. That's amazing.
Yeah, let me see. Because what was the band that it said it was... Yeah, because here's what it says on the official wiki page. The song Y-Rock, the artist Aquabats, original artist was listed as Leather Pirate. And then in parentheses, it just says the Aquabats.
That's so weird because that's an 18-year-old chestnut that I'm just cracking open right now.
So speaking of ska bands that usually didn't have a lot of horns, Beer is followed by Hopeless by Goldfinger. And Goldfinger is another band. Like, they had like two or three flawless records. But Goldfinger bothers me, and I was thinking about this.
What? Why?
But hear me out. Goldfinger bothers me in the same way that, like, Save Ferris and the Ataris bother me.
Oh, God, you're going to make an enemy out of me right now, aren't you?
Which is that there's no... Only the lead singer is the only original member of that band. And, like, I think that that's, like, fine, but I guess that there's, like, this part of me that's, like... It's weird to me that you've got, like, one set of bands where everybody knows every member and they're very, like... No, like, you know, there's like that whole debate of like, is Blink-182 still Blink-182 if Tom's not in it, but Matt Skiba is. But then like with Goldfinger, it's like it can just be John and whoever the fuck he wants to be in his band, and it's always going to be Goldfinger. And I just think that's kind of like weird to me. Like, well,
okay, so Mike Herrera is currently playing bass with them.
That's what I mean. Like, it's just a super group now.
I have no problem with that. I have literally no problem with this. I don't know, man. I love Goldfinger. Even their bad records are still entertaining. I'm just saying,
right now, Goldfinger is John Fieldman, Travis Barker, and Mike Herrera. Like, that's not Goldfinger.
Are you saying that you wouldn't pay to see that? I would fucking pay to see that.
I would see that, but to me, it's like, that's not Goldfinger. That is a super group. That's like, there's a difference.
Man, you are a whiny baby.
I just, because I think about, like, Simon Wells, the original bass player that formed the band, like, all the original dudes, like, they're just like, this isn't the band that we formed anymore. Like, that kind of sucks. Like, at least, I guess for me, because it's like, at least Gwen Stefani put music out under Gwen Stefani. She didn't just keep putting out music and being like, oh, this is No Doubt still.
But no, that is totally not comparable, because Gwen Stefani's music is dance music, which she was trying to inject into No Doubt when they did Hella Good, whatever the fuck that record is. But so the style of her solo material is different than No Doubt. That's the reason why she was doing it under her own name. But then the Goldfinger sounds the same.
Yeah. The cameos on the new Goldfinger album are absurd, side note.
I haven't listened to it. I didn't even have any records.
I just clicked into it. They put out a new album called The Knife. And it's, you know, like I said, it's Travis Barker on drums and Mike Herrera on bass. But then it has a song featuring Josh from 21 Pilots. It has another song featuring Mark from Blink-182. And it has another song featuring Nick from 311.
Nick Hexum, and I'm the one that knows about things. Because it takes two, and we swangs better than you. And it's time for the dub, and we'll roll to the club. And I know just what to do. I'm hitting in the freak mode. Thank you for letting me do that.
And apparently, and also the guitarist from Mighty Mighty Boss Tones does a guitar solo in one of the songs.
Wow, because he never got to do one in Mighty Mighty Boss
Tones. Yeah, it's just, that's so weird. Oh, no, I was thinking about that the other day because I was just like, that's so fucking weird. Oh, and the other guitarist is the guitar player from Story of the Year in Goldfinger.
But that is shocking to me.
All right, so the next song, I can't remember how it goes anymore, but it's a Dickey song called Nobody But Me. And I believe it's a cover. it's a cover that sounds like na 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 na. It's like a 60s like dance song.
I didn't know that was a cover. I always get that confused with Nobody But Me by Say Ferris.
That makes
you know
sense.
That song?
Ooh. Yeah, that's a great song.
To bring the attention, the first song we mentioned, I'm not saying it's a better cover, but Say Ferris, Come On Eileen is kind of up there with Real Big Fish.
Oh yeah, it's one of the best. But I have to stand by my assertion that Take On Me is the all time greatest, and that's even taking into consideration like anything done by Me First.
I was trying to think of the band that just covered songs.
Take It On The Run is a really good cover, and I love their cover of Wild World, Wild World, right?
Yeah.
Ooh, baby, baby, it's a wild world. Yeah. I love that, and I love I Believe I Can Fly, but I just don't think that those are, like, very creative covers, you know? I feel like most of what Me First does is just... they just do the same song over and over again.
Yeah. No, it's I think that the best comparable the best song, there's two songs by Me First that I think are, like, to me are good enough covers that I would put them among, like, the best pop punk covers, but most of it is just the same song over and over and over again with just different songs being sang over top of the riff. But I really love their version of One Tin Soldier. I always thought was really, really fucking catchy. And I think it's on Blowing in the Wind. They did I Only Want to Be With You. And I fucking love their version of that. The I Don't Know What It Is That Makes Me Love You So. Yeah. Like, but I feel like Me First and the Gimme Gimmes is kind of a softball too, because they do so many 50 songs, and 50 songs just sound great covered as a punk song.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, why do you think I like punk, or why do you think I like 50s music? It's the exact same shit.
You ever hear Bayside covers? Bayside's cover album?
No. What,
they did a cover album? Oh, here we go. Yeah. Look it up.
Is it
good, or am I going to be angry?
Their cover of Moving Out is one of my favorite covers by Billy Joel.
Oh, I have heard that cover. That is a really good cover.
They do.
Oh my God, they did a cover of Be My Baby?
Yeah, Runaway, Oliver's Army.
Is it Runaway like...
My
Runaway.
Del
Shannon. It's only five songs.
Yeah, it's only. I have the vinyl of it because I love it so
Wild
much.
Night as what
Van,
Wild Night?
What's his name?
Van Morrison.
Van Morrison, Wild Night, Oliver's Army, mm-hmm. Elvis Costello, The Ronettes, and it ends with Moving Out, which is like a fucking phenomenal cover.
How did I? This came out 6 years ago.
You know who does my favorite version of Be My Baby, though? And I think it's a band that's super underlooked all the time, is the Dolly Rots. Does a really good version of Be My Baby.
I do not know. Because Be My Baby is one of my favorite 60s girl group songs of all time.
I love the Ronettes. Yeah, like I love all their fucking big hit songs.
Yeah, the Ronettes are like forgotten under the Supremes, you know?
Which is sad, because they're the face of like the 60s in my mind.
all right, so we got one last... We got one last song on the soundtrack. We're going really long on this one. So another cover, Smash Mouth doing Why Can't We Be Friends, which I feel like
not
this cover appeared
cover.
In a lot of movies. I got to be honest, man. The first Smash Mouth album is a good record. Fushio Mang, when they were just a ska punk band before they started doing just generic pop music, is a really good record. I remember loving, I forget what the song's called, but it's them basically singing all Italian stereotypes about being in the mob, and I used to fucking love that song. And Walking on the Sun, we've talked about it on other episodes. Walking on the Sun is a good jam, dude.
Like, I can guess which episode.
Yeah. Can't hardly wait. Soundtracking, yep. Yeah. But there's a few songs that are worth shouting out that appear in the movie that aren't on the soundtrack. First one, right out the gate, Scatman.
Yes.
By Scatman John.
When they saw
Then we've got Roses Are Red by Aqua, which I don't remember where this is in the movie, but the fact that there's a song by Aqua in it makes total sense. And of course, the iconic Warts on Your Dick song by DVDA. So, Scott, I know you wanted to talk about them. The floor is now yours.
Your life is spinning out of control. The whole world is out to get you. Nothing seems right. Everything's wrong. Nothing seems right.
Dude,
we gotta do fucking Orgasmo so that I can do the next.
Now you're a man.
Dude, the best in that is, what makes a man? Is it the woman in his arms? Just cause she has big titties? Or is it the way he fights every day? No, it's probably the titties!
This movie is so much better. Well, basically the movies that Trey Parker and Matt Stone made are so much better than anything they ever did with South Park. Like,
100%. Like, don't get me wrong. I fucking love South
Even
Park.
Even the South Park.
I love the South Park movie.
I was going to say, the South Park movie is probably the best thing that they've ever done with South Park as well. Like, they just... I think it's... But the special thing is with Trey Parker, Matt Stone, and it's something that as I've become more and more of like a musical fan in general, is that they have such a legitimate love of musicals that when they write songs, they're so intelligently written to like specific standards. Like the South Park musical works as a legitimate musical. And it's why like Book of Mormon is so good.
I want to see it so bad.
I've listened. I want to see it too, but I've listened to the soundtrack and it's like flawless. And then you've got like their love of cheesy 80s hair metal. So when they do like America, fuck yeah, and Now You're a Man, like it's that extra touch where like people have done shitty 80s hair metal songs before, but it doesn't have that love that they clearly have for that genre.
And the one thing that I just love about them so much is, as bonkers as they are in everything they write, and they constantly push the envelope, the fact that when they were shitting on Scientology spent a lot of money on PIs to investigate them, and they came back and were like, these are just two normal fucking guys. Like, they couldn't find any dirt on Trey Parker and Matt Stone. They're just two regular guys that wake up and go write a show or movie, and that's it. That's so cool. Like,
my favorite song that DVDA ever did, and I don't know how much South Park you've ever watched, Scott, but there's the episode that they did of South Park that is a parody of all of the 80s teen flicks. And they cover Don't You Forget About Me. And it is the best DVDA song. Because they're just like... like, it's like super out of tune, like, singing that song. So good. That's one of the best episodes of that show, too.
Do they write Twisted Steel? Or is that a different band?
I don't know.
When they're sitting in line to get in the club at Orgasmo, and it's like the fucking German band, like Twisted Steel, leather donut.
Yeah. That's on the Orgasmo soundtrack.
I feel like that could be a real song because Germany's weird.
Yeah.
like they did that song from Super Troopers.
Headset.
Okay. Yeah, that's probably an actual thing.
They're a California band. Or is that something different? That's just Headset. Is the Headset a different band?
Leather donut! Oh my god.
That's like, God, we were just talking about like weird techno songs the other day with Slackers, and there's just that Sponge Bath song that plays in the background. It's like, it's so good. It's just a techno beat and the guy going, Sponge Bath, like over and over again.
And another band that did great German techno industrial band is Reggie and the Full Effect, which we've talked about on Soundtracking before, right?
Dude, yeah. I saw Reggie and the Full Effect live opening for Save the Day and Say Anything. And it was
that was that set. Yeah, awesome. I saw that set too.
When he dressed up like
was
the
it
sexy
Christmas
cop.
Time?
He dressed up like the sexy cop.
He comes out and he does, was that Love Reality?
Love Reality. I missed him. God. You saw him around Christmas time, so I'm sure he made it then a Santa thing. I saw him right before.
Yeah, he made them all dress up as fucking Santa's elves, and they took off his Santa costume. He's like sweaty and fat. Maggie's like, that is one of the most unattractive men I've ever seen in real life.
They're so dedicated because I saw them probably about 3 weeks before you, and they were all dressed. He was dressed like a turkey, and they were all dressed like pilgrims and shit because it was right before Thanksgiving.
Oh, what's your favorite Reggie and the Full Effect song?
Oh, I never listened to him. I just saw him live, so I'm out.
Matt, you tell me, and then I'll tell you. Let me go through my Reggie.
Mine is so stupid, but I love their cover of Raining Blood by Slayer so much.
Yeah. They played it live the first time I saw them because they were touring. Because, you know, it's just the guy. I don't know what his real name is, but the guy that is Reggie.
He plays keyboards for Get Up Kids. That was his whole thing.
So it's him, and then he just gets his friends and other more famous bands to be his backing band, or at least that's the way it used to be. He had from Autumn to Ashes as his backing band once. it was the weirdest show, because the reason that I went was because I wanted to see Dillinger Four. Because I was like, these guys are never going to come to Ohio again because they're all old, fat punk dudes that are running the Triple Rock now. So I in Milwaukee. So I went to see them at a venue in Cleveland, and it was just Reggie and the Dillinger Four, I think. Or no, maybe there was I think that the who's that band that does I Think My Baby Is a Communist?
That I don't know.
the Briefs. So it was the Briefs opened, and then Reggie and the Full Effect did a double set where they did all three of their fake bands, because, you know, there's the techno, there's Reggie and the Full Effect, there's the techno band, and then there's Dwarf Invasion, I think is the name of the German industrial thing. And they came out in different costumes for each one. And so it took like an hour and a half for them to do their set. And then Dillinger Four came on, and it was great. But so I got to see them do Reggie was the headliner because Dillinger Four played right before them. That's right. But my favorite Reggie song, I think, has to be it's on Under the Tray. Congratulations, Smackin' Katie.
Yes.
Yeah,
that is a great song.
Mood for Love is great. I sing that song to Megan all the time. The part where it's like, you know, there's a time in every boy's life when he has to make a decision involving women or girls. Oh, man. And then my favorite Dwarf Invasion song is Deathnotronic off of Songs Not to Get Married To.
Okay.
You know, like, this beat is Deathnotronic. That one. And then they're off tempo like all the time. Man, that band is so underrated and hilarious.
Oh God!
That's all we have to say.
Yeah, that's soundtracking. You know, we went off topic as is tradition. Yeah, so we'll be back, I'm sure, next month with another soundtracking episode, because, you know, I think it's my favorite of our bonus shows.
Oh, me too. I love Growing Up Kelly, but the soundtracking ones. I feel like I learn more about you guys through music than I do through your embarrassing childhoods.
Listening to the Geekscape Network.